Today we are completing our series on Genesis chapters 1 through 3. And we've looked already at chapter 1 and seen that the God who created this whole universe, everything that we can conceive of, is greater and bigger than anything we can imagine. And it is through His power and the fact that He is above everything that the world and everything we see and can't see is held together by His will and by His power. But that's not the whole truth about this God we serve. And so Genesis 2 gives us a different image, an image equally true about God, but that can't be shown in the same story as the first creation account. This is an image of a God who is intimately involved with His creation, one who would stoop down upon the earth and would collect up dust and would mold that dust into His creation, getting His hands dirty at the same time. So a God who is intimately involved with us, with His creation. And these two images come together to form for us an image of a God who seems to be impossible. A God who is both transcendent and immanent. A God who is far off and a God who is near to us. And then last week we looked at humankind and our relationship with God was created to be one thing, that we were supposed to be in faith and trust in God. Specifically trusting in Him as our knowledge of good and evil. And so there was this tree, a tree of knowledge of good and evil that we were told not to eat of, that set up this relationship of trust. And yet we saw last week how Eve, having the conversation with the serpent, broke this relationship. And Adam was no better, because in the original language we see that Eve turned and gave it to Adam, which means that he was standing right there listening the whole time. So men, you don't get off on this one. We were standing right there waiting to see what happened to the woman when she ate of that apple, ate of that fruit, seeing if she would truly die the way that God had said it would happen. And so we were kind of testing, using her as a guinea pig, if it may fit your imagination for that. And so we are just as guilty as women in the taking of that fruit and turning inward towards ourself as our own knowledge of good and evil. And then everything since then has just been pretty messed up and broken. In fact, there's a phrase that you see over and over in the book of Judges that kind of highlights this fact. And it is that everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And everything in description after that phrase is a gigantic mess each time. Because when we turn inward and we turn in on ourselves and make ourselves the focal point of all of creation, we break the essence of what we were created to be, and we were created to be servants, living in trust of God, being His representation on earth, His authority, helping to mold the earth into His will and His likeness. And when we break that, there's effects. So this week we're going to be looking at the effects of that brokenness that happened in the last week's lesson. The first thing I think that we could see is that there's a brokenness in our relationship with creation. There's a brokenness in our role to steward and to guide creation. You can see this in the relationship of humanity to the snake. Yes, the snake is often seen as being an analogy for evil or for Satan. But let's look at it just as a creature within the garden. There is now enmity between the humankind and the snake kind. How many of you really like snakes in here? Not very many people. So it seems to hold true even today that humans and snakes don't really get along. But more than this, I think it's an image and an idea that the creation we were designed to steward and to grow up and to mature and to love and disciple has radically turned against us. And so animals and the whole animal kingdom and human interaction with the animal kingdom is radically different than it was before. The animals that we use are used really for very selfish purposes. And then the rest of the animals that we don't use, we either ignore and we try and kick out or that we hunt or kill just because of our own safety concerns. And so humanity over the ages has turned against creation. We can see it later, too, in Adam's curse, when it says that Adam is going to now have to work and toil at the ground in order to get food out of it. It's true. Science has seen that even our current advances in agriculture has begun to deplete the ground. We've not been good stewards of the land. And so they're trying to figure out ways that they could rotate crops, things that in ancient times we did all the time. But as we've become more and more selfish and demand for more and more food and specific types of food, we've depleted the nutrients of the soil. And so we've had to try and replace them with chemicals and other things. And now we're realizing that isn't good. And so we're changing that as well. And so you see the selfish attitude of humanity even has an impact and effect on the very ground that we come from, the very ground where we get our sustenance out of. And so we see that there's a brokenness between humanity and creation. The relationship doesn't exist the way it seems like God intended it to exist. And our selfishness, our desire to continue to take more from creation, only seems to break the relationship further. And so it's us who are the problem. It's humanity who chose to look inward and to go inward in self-defense and self-seeking and selfishness that has broken that relationship. But there's another brokenness, there's another broken relationship that is found here. And it's the broken relationship that we see between humanity with each other. Notice the curse that was put on Eve. What is it? What does he say real quick in this? You'll have pain in childbirth. Now, we do all know that there is incredible pain in the act of childbirth itself. Right, women? Yes. So everybody needs to thank their mothers next week. And everybody has a mother, so we can all thank her for going through that pain for us. But trust me, that is not where the pain ended. Because you've been a pain in her, well, I should censor myself there. Ever since then, you have been a pain to your mother because of the choices you make as a selfish, sinful human being. You continually break her heart and break the relationship between you and her. Mothers, am I right?
Yes.
Yes. That was pretty resounding. So pain in childbirth, I don't think just says that there's an act of pain that happens when you bear forth a child, but I think God is proclaiming that because of us turning inward and becoming selfish rather than selfless like we were designed to be, that the pain in our relationships will continue. And the special bond between a mother and their child or a father and their child is broken because of that choice, because of that sin, because of that turning inward. We could see a brokenness in the relationship between a husband and a wife. Remember that the words that were used a couple weeks back when we looked at the creation of man and woman is that the woman was to be a co-equal partner with the man, not subservient. The word used as a helper is a word used for God, Yahweh, as he helps Israel. 16 out of the 19 times the word is used in the Old Testament. And we would never call God subservient to Israel. In fact, we would see that God is more powerful than Israel. And so the creation was supposed to be that there was two co-equal people working together, representing God's will on earth. And yet in the curse to Eve, we see that that relationship is broken. And it says that now your desire will be for your husband. This is not the way it was meant to be. This is not the design of creation. This is an effect of sin. This is an effect of the turning inward and looking towards ourselves for our own knowledge of good and evil on the world. We've lost our equal partnership. And so it's Jesus Christ and his salvation of the world that overturns these things. And why I think our church is correct in ordaining women. Because we're undoing the effects of sin. We're bringing it back to the way God designed the co-partnership of man and woman to work. The third thing that we see, I think, in these relationships that are broken is that we have a relationship broken with God. A relationship broken with God. It's a familiar scene. Becky kind of set the stage for us. But I have been on one side or the other of that scene at least multiple times in my own life. where a parent walks into the room and you're gobbling down on cookies that you weren't supposed to eat, and you turn around because you notice that they're there, and you hide the cookies behind your back, and the guilt is just literally smeared across your face. You know that you were doing something you weren't supposed to be doing. You know that you are guilty of not accomplishing or following the will of your parent, that you're acting selfish towards yourself. You're wanting something, and you're just going for it with reckless abandon, no control at all. And so when the parent comes into the room, you are reminded really quickly of where you stand. And then guilt floods in, and guilt causes you to hide. Notice in this passage something that's always struck me, that has always caught my attention and made me think, is that there was an appointment in the garden that day. Maybe it was an appointment that was set every day in the garden. I don't know. We didn't see what the history was, but there was an appointment where God was walking in the cool of the day in the garden. He was there, continuing the image of a God who is intimately involved with his creation and desires a relationship with his creatures. It was God who showed up for that appointment. It was God who was there at the right time, walking, looking for Adam and Eve, that he might be in fellowship with them. But when he gets there, there's something missing. There's something not right. His creation that he expected to receive him, to see him and come running to him probably and embrace him and desire the fellowship with him, all of a sudden weren't around. And he had to call out to them, "Where are you? Where are you?" And like the little girl in Becky's story, we stayed hidden behind our tree. Hopefully he doesn't notice us over here. Maybe he'll just go away. But he didn't go away. He continued to call until he got Adam's attention, and Adam stepped out from behind the hiding and said that we were afraid. We were afraid. What evidence that they had that they needed to be afraid of God? A God who had given them everything in the garden and said, "Eat of everything, just not this one tree, but everything else is yours. Enjoy it." God had given them goodness, had created a paradise for them, and they're afraid of him. Brokenness in their relationship with God led not God to disappear from the relationship, but caused them to change their attitude towards God. And they began to seek self-protection, self-defense against this God who is so powerful that they knew he could crush them at any minute. And they were terrified of that fact because their whole focus was not on that God and on glorifying him and loving him and worshiping him. It was on themselves. Friends, I could tell you that I don't need to tell you this story is true, that it happened. I don't really care if it happened, because I know for a fact that it happened in my life, that it happens on a daily basis almost with me. That as I turn inward and do things that are selfish and that I know I shouldn't be doing, that I know won't bring forth fruit for the good of anyone else or even for my own good, that my response to the goodness of God is to hide, to run away. And so I avoid my devotional times, I avoid reading scripture, I avoid praying, all because I'm terrified of God. Why? God has only done goodness to me. God has only shown me grace and mercy and kindness. And the times even when he's felt like he's been stinging me and correction have only led to goodness in my life. So what evidence do I have to be afraid of God? Except that I'm still turned inward. I'm still thinking only of myself and looking at God, and I'm terrified of what he could do to me, despite the fact that he's proven what he will do with me and for me and through me. And so daily I have to remind myself that my little hidey hole isn't the place that I should be. But it should be coming out before God, confessing to God, telling God that I've messed up, and trusting in his grace to restore me. Now think about this. God gave to them a command and then said, on the day that you eat of it, surely you will die. I don't think he meant I'm going to kill you. I think he meant that the relationship broken by our choice between us and him leads to our spiritual death. But we see God's choices in that moment. And instead, what God does is he removes their little temporary coverings that they created out of fig leaves, and he sacrifices an animal. And he makes real clothing for them that they might cover over the very thing that they're terrified of, and that's their exposure, their vulnerability. God's grace is even there in the midst of our deepest, darkest time when we turned against him and chose to go our own way. And in the midst of the curses, there's a promise that the son of the woman will crush the head of the serpent. Something which has been regularly seen as a prophecy for Jesus Christ from very earliest days of the church. And so isn't it fitting that some many thousand years later, one human being sat in a different garden. And when he cried out to God the Father, all we see is silence. One man who did the work that we were supposed to do and failed at, perfect obedience and submission to God. And yet when he cries out, all he receives is God's back turned on him. For your sake, for my sake, that he might make a way to recreate us as humanity in the image that God designed us to be in. And so in 2 weeks, we're going to be back with a new series, a series called The Fix Is In, where we're going to look more deeply at what God did to fix the brokenness that we've been looking at the last few weeks. See more deeply the work of Jesus Christ and how it impacts and creates us as Christians to be a new kind of humanity. A humanity that loves and pursues people the way that Jesus and his Father did. So let us now come before our God at the table.